Blessings of the Triple Gem, Theravan Saranai. Welcome to the start of our weekly Metta Lab slow sessions. So we are beginning these sessions because this is a way of gradually learning, and they're slow sessions because we're going to take it slowly, week by week, building up some of these sutta meditations. And of course the focus is metta, loving kindness. We'll be going through different sutta meditations, beginning with Karaniya Metta. So this is in Sutta Nipata 1.8. And some of you may have already learned this meditation. So this is for beginners as well as people who have already developed loving kindness. And the reason for it is because we're going to deepen our practice. So we're going to set a very solid foundation following the Buddha's instructions. And as we've said, this is supramundane loving kindness. And what this means is at the time of the Buddha, there were already teachings of loving kindness. And there are a number of suttas where Buddha actually explicitly answered the question of what makes his teaching of loving kindness quite distinct. And that's where we develop the first doorway to Nibbana, or painful practice with slow realization. In Pali, this is Dukkha Patipada, Danda Abhinya. And this is based on the Asubha Sutta and also from the Pethakopadesa. And the Buddha also taught about liberation of mind by loving kindness. So this is Metta Cetta Vimukti. So you can see that there's a gradual pathway that begins with Metta, then Metta Appamana, then Metta Cetta Vimukti, and also Metta with the seven factors of enlightenment. So in this way, what happens is we become very, very good at loving kindness. What we'll also see when we develop this, particularly when we start to get into the first doorway to Nibbana, is that this first profitable direction is really about immeasurable metta, but what we can see is that it is strongly underpinned by the noble truth of suffering. That becomes very apparent. And so even as we go through Karaniya Metta, that's what we'll be drawing out. And also, by the time we get to metta with the bhujangas, or seven factors of enlightenment, as well as metta chetta vimukti, what will become is very, very skilled. And if you think about what's needed in the world right now, and what's needed because we're born into this particular predicament in the world, with these kinds of bodies, and with an immense amount of greed, hatred, and delusion, metta is the antidote for many, many things. And so if we sense that the world is very angry, that the world is imbued with a lot of unwholesome qualities, then this is the antidote for that. So this first session today will be starting looking at the Karaniya Metta Sutta, so developing loving kindness. And we can begin by paying homage to the Triple Gem. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dhamma, and homage to the Noble Sangha. So how can we get the best out of these sessions, and this session in particular? The first thing is to keep an open mind. It's really important to listen to the Buddha's words, hear them fresh for the first time, even though we may have heard them before. And also, this is a different way of meditating for a lot of people in terms of sutta meditations. And sutta meditations are really being able to take a whole sutta from start to finish and to really try and penetrate, to understand its meaning, and also how to practice it. So the Buddha often said that the best miracle is the miracle of instruction. So not the miracle of having powers, spiritual powers and things like that, but to actually be able to understand the instructions, to be able to see the instructions as tantamount to being able to practice the Dhamma. So when we go through, what will happen is we often talk about the akusala qualities, so the unskilled states, unwholesome qualities, in order to then walk the path of developing skilled ones, wholesome ones. So it's really good to have an open mind about maybe I might have some of these qualities, we don't often like to admit. It's not something that is conditioned into our makeup to admit unskilled states. But the really important thing is to have that friendly attitude towards it as we develop loving kindness. The second is to be okay with not understanding everything. So there may be Pali words or there may be different suttas that are referenced, and some of it might be overwhelming or some of it might be different. And so the idea is to be okay not to understand everything. The main thing is that we're taking this slowly. There will be repetition. We will go over things again and again. And so it's important to remember that this is a gradual practice. So we gradually train and then we make gradual progress. So even if you learn one new Pali word or hear a sutta for the first time that you've never read before, heard before, or maybe that it's a different way of meditating and you're leaning in towards it, then that's a very good thing. And it's not like when we study an exam at school or listen to a class at school and sometimes we strive to understand everything, but it's not like that situation. Sometimes if you come away just with one insight or one moment of peacefulness, that's a very good thing. Be happy about that. And then remember that we're all learners. We're sakers on this path. If we haven't attained to arahantship, to have completed the path to liberation, then we're all trainees and learners, sakers. And so we lean on each other in these sessions to actually come together and make right effort, to encourage each other to walk this path. And then apply yourself to the meditation. This is really important because in our daily life, we don't often have the ability to do this kind of meditation. We're busy, we have many roles and many responsibilities and different stresses. And so take this time as a bit of self-care to listen to the Buddha's words, to try and practice the Buddha's words, and to know that we're doing this together. So most of these sessions, when we do meditation, it's about cleaning the mind. And some of us may not have cleaned the mind that often, or maybe we've never cleaned the mind. And so if we're cleaning the mind, that gives us the ability to calm the mind. And if we calm the mind, then we have the ability to concentrate the mind. And if we concentrate the mind, we can lift the mind, uplift it to a high absorption or lift it up so that it is resonating with something that is far more superior and wholesome. And then we also say that use our own examples. So when we do this, this is how we connect with the Dhamma. So usually what you'll find with Sutta Meditation Series is that we give a series of examples. They might be from the similes of the Buddha or at the time of the Buddha, but it's also our own examples. So something of those might resonate, but then something of your own might resonate, which might be very helpful. And it's really good at this juncture just to take the temperature of one's mind. What is it like right now? Is it sad? Is it heavy? Is it tired? Is it stressed? Or is it okay? And so by the end of the session, one should be able to also see, okay, how's the mind now? Is it uplifted? Is it more spacious? Has it calmed down? Is it less stressed? So that's one of the things that we can do. And to remember, we're walking this path together, so it's an opportunity to practice together. And lastly, let's have good wishes for everyone. Everyone on this session today, everyone who has helped us up until this point, we have good wishes. So it's a good place to start our session. So let's start with the background to the loving kindness meditation, this Karaniya Metta. So it appears in two places. It appears in Sutta Nipata, and there's a commentary to the Sutta Nipata, as well as the Dhammapada, where Buddha has this saying. And there's also commentary to that. Now, when there's commentary, we take that as having been written or gathered after the time of the Buddha. So what we really lean into is the actual sutta itself for the meaning and that sort of thing. But what we do know is that there were 500 monks or thereabouts, and they had taken some instruction from the Buddha, and then they'd set off to find a place to go and practice. So they came across a village some distance away, and in that village they were offered requisites, and then they were invited to stay for the rainy season in the forest. And so they started to stay in the forest, and they tried to go about and meditate and do the things that they were wanting to do. But then the deities in that forest were not happy that they'd come to stay there, and they started to make difficulties for the monks. They would make sounds and they would cause affliction to the monks. It was said that the monks would sniffle and sneeze and cough, and they would have headaches and things like that. And then some had visions of headless bodies and different difficult scenes that came to the mind. And so they ended up leaving the forest. And when they left the forest, they went back to the Buddha and they asked, "We can't stay there. What should we do? And is there anything that we can do?" So I'm just paraphrasing. So the Buddha actually said to them that what he would teach them is the Karaniya Metta Sutta, how to develop or cultivate loving kindness. And he actually encouraged them to go back to that forest. So he taught this particular sutta that we're going to be focusing on for the next few sessions. So when they went back, they chanted, and they chanted the Karaniya Metta Sutta, and then they went and started practicing there, and all the difficulties actually subsided. And then later, when they met up with the Buddha, what happened was the Buddha gave them a particular teaching about it. And at this juncture, it's not clear to see, particularly when I read out this particular saying of the Buddha, that what underpins it is really the understanding of this body and to understand the noble truth of suffering. And that will become clearer as we move through the next few weeks of going through the Karaniya Metta Sutta. And some of you will understand that, having meditated on this before, and also meditated on the Dukkhapatipada Dandapinya, the painful way with slow realization, or painful practice with slow realization. So the Buddha gave this particular teaching, having met up with them again, and what actually happened was these 500 or so monks attained arahantship. So it's a very powerful meditation. And I know the commentaries say something different, that they were meditating on different things, but what underpins Karaniya Metta is very much about understanding the true nature of the body, understanding the true nature of this predicament, being able to overcome the greed path, because it strongly aligns with the non-greed path. And that will become much, much clearer as we go along. And of course, non-greed, non-hatred, non-delusion is what the Noble Eightfold Path is about. And this will become much, much clearer as we go along. Now, the Buddha's saying in the Dhammapada is, having understood this body as a clay pot, so already we know that infers fragility, being breakable. And then the Buddha says, having established this mind as a fortress, one should battle Mara with the sword of wisdom. So what we can see here is that we need to fortify the mind, develop the mind, fortify the mind. And where we overcome challenges from Mara, whether it's Mara as a being or whether it's just Mara in terms of the forces of greed, hatred and delusion, we need to apply wisdom. And what is clear is that the Buddha's pathways are always wisdom pathways, insight pathways. And that's what we develop, particularly when the Eightfold Path becomes the Tenfold Path, the right path. And so the Buddha then says, and protect what has been conquered, clinging to nothing. So this is a really strong thing that the Buddha talks about throughout his teachings, that we, once we clean the mind, once we come to insight, as we develop the wisdom, we don't go backwards. We don't go and pick up something that we have already abandoned. And this becomes how we train. And so in that way, we cling to nothing. We don't have particular attachments. When we let go, we try our best to continue to let go of those things. And this becomes clear in the meditation. So we'll come back to this. This may not seem clear right now. Maybe to some, maybe not to others, that's okay. But we will reference this again as we go through, because it's a very important thing. And even the deeper meaning behind this Dhammapada verse will resonate in a few weeks' time, in a few months' time, because as our understanding grows, as our practice grows, and our confidence grows in the Buddha's teachings, then this is something that really comes across in a deeper sense. So why did the Buddha teach loving kindness? Well, as we said before, it's a protection. So we can see here that there are, when we cultivate this really well, it becomes a protection, and the blessings of the loving kindness go through that. So we'll look into this a little more. We also know from the suttas that it's an antidote to anger. So anger being anything that is rooted in ill will, resistance, aversion, annoyance, but outright anger. And when we birth this body, as we age, inherently we are companioned with anger, because it's almost like we expect not to have an aging body or to have aging experiences. But the fact that they happen and we're ignorant of that, not conscious of that, then of course we are companioned with anger. And so often we think, oh, it's just anger that happens in particular situations. But if you really think about understanding this body, then you understand that we will get angry a lot if we're not aware of this, if we don't have comprehension of this. And so loving kindness is something that the Buddha recommends for the rest of our life, that it's one of those brahmaviharas, divine abodes, and we'll go through the meaning of what it means to abide in the divine abode, to have noble living when we go through, in particular, karaniya metta. So it's the antidote to anger. Then it's also something that helps us to develop the mind. There's a clear wisdom pathway, insight pathway that can be developed. And so it helps us to uplift the mind. That's a very wonderful thing when it comes to dealing with everyday life, as well as dealing with this predicament. And so what we want to do when we talk about meditation is about developing the mind. And in that way, we can make the mind happy, we can make the mind concentrated, we can lift the mind. But ultimately, the real answer is Buddha taught loving kindness as a pathway to Nibbana. And we'll see that when we go through even the first couple of lines of Karaniya Metta. So it's helping us to the path of liberation and to have the ultimate goal of Nibbana. It can be achieved even with understanding how to do the Karaniya Metta Sutta. So as an encouragement, it's good to look at merit making. And for those who are born into the Buddhist culture, this is something that is known as something very good to make merit. It's very helpful to the spiritual path. It's also part of the non-greed pathway, one of the most important things in order for us to move from worldlings into people who are able to lean towards the noble path. So making merit is part of non-greed path. By giving, we give up. And so that shows that, yes, it's possible. It's possible to be generous. Now, there's this sutta called Velama Sutta. And in the Velama Sutta, when Buddha was a bodhisattva, he gave a great offering. He was known as Velama, and he gave a great offering. So just imagine giving the biggest offering in this world. So imagine we're a billionaire and giving, like in the sense of the Buddha, cartloads of food and supplies and silks and materials and gold and silver. And so in our case, it would be giving lorries of all these different kinds of things, train loads of things, and also just an amazing amount of offerings, as much as we can think it's abundant. Now, in this sutta, the Buddha was saying that if you feed one person with right views, so he's referring to Sotapanna, so stream enterer, that's more meritorious than Velama's great offering. So that's quite amazing. Now, if one were to feed one once returner, that's more meritorious than even feeding the Sotapanna, and greater than, of course, the great offering. So as we go up this particular stairway, you can see that it becomes more and more meritorious. So then it becomes to feed one non-returner, an anagami, is more meritorious. And more meritorious than that is to feed one arahant. And then more meritorious than that is to feed one Pacheka Buddha, so a solitary Buddha that doesn't teach. And then more meritorious than that is to feed the Tathagata, so the perfectly enlightened one. And then people often can't imagine, but to feed the Sangha of bhikkhus headed by the Buddha, that's more meritorious than feeding the Tathagata. So when Buddha encourages us to make offerings to the Sangha, that's for this reason. And then more meritorious than that is to build a dwelling dedicated to the Sangha of the four quarters. And then more meritorious than that, it goes beyond just feeding and building. If one takes refuge in the Triple Gem, so with a mind of confidence to go for refuge, the Buddha, the Dhamma and the Sangha, that's more meritorious. And then more meritorious than that is to undertake the training rules or precepts. So this can be the 5 precepts, the 8 precepts, the 10 precepts and more. So even if one were to take the 5 precepts, that's more meritorious. And then we can see where loving kindness comes into it. It's more meritorious to develop a mind of loving kindness even for the time it takes to pull a cow's udder. So there you have it. The second highest of most fruit merit making is to do one authentic moment it takes to pull a cow's udder of loving kindness, to develop the mind in that way. And the only thing that's more meritorious than that is to develop the perception of anicca, so unlastingness, impermanence, just for the time of a finger snap. So that's very important encouragement for us, that each week when we come together and we're trying to develop loving kindness, doing our meditation, even leaning in this direction, it's very meritorious. And this helps us with the rest of the path. And in the Metta Sutta, and this is in Itivuttaka, so these were the collections of what Kujuttara Upasika remembered of what she heard of the Buddha said this: having cultivated for 7 years a mind of loving kindness, for 7 eons of contraction and expansion, I did not return to this world. Whenever the eon contracted, I reached the plane of streaming radiance. And when the eon expanded, I arose in an empty Brahma mansion. And there I was a Brahma, the great Brahma, the unvanquished victor, the all-seeing, the all-powerful. 36 times I was Sakka, the ruler of the devas, and many hundred of times I was a wheel-turning monarch, righteous, king of righteousness, conqueror of the four quarters of the earth, maintaining stability in the land, in possession of the 7 jewels. What need is there to speak of mere local kingship? It occurred to me, bhikkhus, to wonder, of what kind of deed of mind is this the fruit? Of what deeds ripening is it that I am now of such great accomplishment and power? And then it occurred to me, it is the fruit of 3 kinds of deeds of mine, the ripening of 3 kinds of deeds that I am now of such great accomplishment and power, deeds of giving, of self-mastery and restraint. So even in Buddha's words, if you take them to the mind, you see that as a bodhisattva, he was then reborn multiple times after cultivating 7 years of a mind of loving kindness. And for 7 eons, he was born as the great Brahma, as well as Sakka, king of the devas or ruler of the devas. And these are not small things. And he was also a wheel-turning monarch over those 7 eons. So it's not a small thing. It's an incredible feat to have been reborn into those particular realms, in those very high, prominent places of power and ability. So when asked, or when he recognized why he received the fruit of that, why those great accomplishments and power, is because deeds of giving, self-mastery and restraint. So in terms of giving, this is part of the merit making of loving kindness. In terms of self-mastery, it's the wisdom pathway that is developed. And one of the key things is restraint. Santindriyo cha nipakocha, that there is, one is wise because one knows to restrain. That's a core part of this loving kindness. And we're going to really, really go through it quite deeply There's a number of sutras we're going to go through, and probably I haven't gone through online before as deeply as I'm going to go through this Santindriyocha Nipakocha. This is what I have normally done with other Kalyanamittas when we run sessions via Zoom and also in person. But during Metta Lab, I'm really going to share that. So this is really to show how much it's the non-greed path. Of course, all these are intertwined, but you can see that there's a lot of giving up. There's a lot of giving. By giving, there's a lot of giving up. There's a lot of self-mastery through cultivating Karaniya Metta properly by following the Buddha's instructions, and also to understand the power of restraint. And so that will become clearer as we go through each of these sessions. So one of the other encouragements and things for us to remind ourselves is the 11 blessings of loving kindness. So the Buddha says, Bhikkhus, when the liberation of the mind by loving kindness has been pursued, developed and cultivated, made a vehicle and basis, carried out, consolidated and properly undertaken, 11 benefits are to be expected. What 11? So just before we call out the 11, this is something that we are going to work our way up to. So this liberation of the mind by loving kindness. So we are developing metta, metta apamana, so immeasurable metta, and then metta cetta vimukti. So this liberation of the mind by loving kindness. So it doesn't mean that these blessings don't start to appear as we gradually start to learn metta, but they really come to fruition to really activate very, very well when liberation of the mind by loving kindness is something that we've developed and made like a vehicle, made our basis, carried out, consolidated and properly undertaken. This is the thing that we're trying to do with Metta Lab, that we're trying to make this unconscious competence, that right now we need to consciously cultivate loving kindness, and so they take some effort. But at some point when we make it our vehicle, that this is the basis of how we practice, and it's a very wonderful one to practice, that it becomes our second nature, that we wouldn't want to harm, we wouldn't go towards anger, we would restrain, we would have noble qualities. And so when we consolidate and properly undertake the meditation over time, then these 11 benefits are what we actually dwell in. So what are the 11? The first three are around sleep. So one sleeps happily, one wakes happily, one sees no bad dreams. So in today's modern world, this is amazing. That alone would make us gravitate towards loving kindness, because most people actually sleep quite poorly. And also as one ages, it becomes a factor of aging. And so to be able to sleep happily, wake happily, and see no bad dreams, that's a wonderful thing. So those who practice metta may actually have this ability now, or be familiar with this. And when the sleep is not good, one knows if one goes to sleep with metta, cultivating metta, it's a wonderful thing. The next four are about protection. So one is dear to humans, one is dear to non-humans. So if that is the case, then one wouldn't be attacked, or wouldn't expect to be attacked, or have difficulties, such as like when the monks went to that forest and had difficulties. And then one is protected by devas. So really that what this is saying is that one has qualities that are similar to devas. That's why one receives the protection of devas. Like goes with like. We've seen sutras like that. So devas would protect. And then fire, poison and weapons cannot harm. So again, this is a very important thing when you think about what happens in the world today, that we are endangered by fire, poison and weapons. Poison being, it may not be someone trying to poison us, or it may be, or it may even be the pesticides and things like that in our food, in our water, you know, things like that. Fire being bushfires and other kind of fires that happen. And of course, weapons, knives, guns, all kinds of things. And so when we cultivate metta, then there is some protection there. And then one's mind concentrates easily. So whether we study, we work, we are concentrating on household duties or anything like that. But in the supramundane sense, when we want to lift the mind and lean it towards Nibbana, this is what we need. And so loving kindness as a pathway helps us to do that. And loving kindness, being able to dwell in loving kindness, is also very helpful for that. Then one's appearance becomes clear or bright. So normally this becomes quite apparent, like someone who cultivates loving kindness is not a beauty thing or a vanity thing. It's actually one's aura that one does not want to harm, that one does not want to go towards anger. Then wholesome qualities are what are emanating in one's aura. And so the facial features become quite clear and bright. So often when you see someone learn to do loving kindness properly and starts to really develop it, there's a clearness that develops across their face. And when you look in their eyes, what you see is there's less delusion because, well, there's less greed, hatred, and delusion, and that becomes quite apparent. And then the last two are probably the most important, and that is one dies unconfused, and if one doesn't penetrate to a higher state, one goes to the Brahma world. So most of us don't realize that at the point of death, that is our ultimate exam. So we sit exams at school, at university or college, or at work, and we think those are very, very important. But the most important exam is the one at the point of death, because if we have the right view, then we know that due to karma and rebirth, that we are either going to be heading downwards to a lower destination, or we have the ability to come back to the human realm, which is very rare, or to ascend upwards if we are not able to cultivate the path and attain Nibbana. So if one dies confused, then there's great danger. So it's like studying for a test and being very, very sleepy. So in our case, if we are confused and sleepy, our faculties are not sharp, or our faculties are not up in terms of being able to, especially our spiritual faculties, then certain wrong decisions can be made, or we are at the mercy of our karma. So it's very important to die unconfused. So if one learns the Karaniya Metta, learns painful way or painful practice with slow realization, or learns liberation of the mind by loving kindness, that is a wonderful thing. I cannot stress that enough. And so at the point of death, then if one hasn't penetrated higher, then at least one ascends to the Brahma world. So we know these Brahma worlds from the suttas, there's greater happiness, there's more wealth, there's more wonderful experiences. And so that's something that one can look forward to if one hasn't penetrated higher. And the other thing to say, just going back a moment, is there's a few passages from the Metta Nisansa Sutta that are quite lovely. It says, "For one who ever mindful develops measureless loving kindness, the fetters thin out as he sees the destruction of the acquisitions." So that means our craving is reduced in terms of acquisitions. And so in terms of the fetters, that means if the fetters thin out, that's very helpful to attaining path and fruit. And then if with a mind free from hate, one arouses loving kindness towards just one being, one thereby becomes good. So that means we become skilled, like kusala. Compassionate in mind toward all beings, the noble one generates abundant merit. So we've been through the meritoriousness of loving kindness. Those royal sages who conquered the earth with its multitudes of beings traveled around performing sacrifices, the horse sacrifice, the person sacrifice, sammapasa, Vajapaya, Niragala. So all these are not worth a 16th part of a well-developed, loving, kind mind. Just as the hosts of stars cannot match a 16th part of the moon's radiance. So back in the day, there were all these groups and who were doing sacrifices and offerings, and those don't count towards what one can do with loving kindness, as well as the simile of the moon, that it radiates so luminously greater than the stars. And so that's the Buddha's simile for that. So one who does not kill or enjoin killing, one who does not conquer or enjoin conquests, one who has loving kindness towards all beings, harbors no enmity toward anyone. So there's no hostility. One does not want to harm anyone, endanger anyone. So it's quite lovely. So we know that Queen Samavati was the foremost female lay follower who dwelt in loving kindness. So she was there at the time of Gautama Buddha, and she was married to King Uddena, who had a fierce temper, and her childhood was quite difficult. And there is an actual session that we did on Queen Samavati. And we learned that she encountered, once she married King Uddena, a lot of difficulties with Margandhya, who was another queen that married King Uddena. And she was someone who was very devoted to the Buddha, wanted to hear the Buddha. And her helper, or I guess you could call servant, was this upasika called Kujutara. And she would go out and buy flowers and at the same time go and listen to the Buddha. And so she would come back to the court and almost like explain or say what she had heard to the queen and the courtiers, the ladies in waiting. And that's how the queen learned. And then later on, she had the ability to learn in other ways. But she's our role model. I think one of the things that we need to understand, this is a lay person. Although she was a queen, but at the time, a lay person being able to be declared by the Buddha the foremost, and of course she would have made that vow or intention in a past life to be the foremost, but for us it's an inspiration. A lay person, not a monastic at the time of the Buddha, was declared foremost. So the Buddha might have declared a monastic, but it's not put into the suttas that we have, so we don't know. But in terms of a role model, one that is worthy, it would be Samavati. So we might reference her a little bit later along. So now we come to the Karaniya Metta Sutta. So with this Karaniya Metta Sutta, we have an inside pathway or wisdom pathway that is highlighted in yellow. We're actually going to go through the whole sutta, not just pull out the inside pathway, because I think it's really helpful with slow sessions to get the whole understanding of it. But to meditate, we are going to emphasize the inside pathway, because in doing so, this is how we develop the mind, how we develop insight and wisdom, and how we come to developing in the first instance. The first third is about wholesome qualities. And then the second third is about what the Buddha says in terms of what are the fundamentals in how we actually cultivate loving kindness and the things to bear in mind. And it gives us more than one or two bites of the cherry in terms of overcoming anger and ill will and deepening our understanding of why metta is so powerful. And then also the last third is really about knowing how we can practice it and why it becomes called the divine abode or noble living, so Brahma Metta, and we will go through that. And then lastly, right at the end of the last third, is the real insight that comes with loving kindness, which is that one is able to remove greed for sensual pleasures, and therefore, having that non-greed, one sees that one does not want to come into a mother's womb, to come back into human realm or lower. So if that is the case, if one truly develops that insight, then one can attain path and fruit of a non-returner. So that means that's quite high up, that's anagami. Now, that doesn't mean other path and fruit cannot be developed along the way. One of the suttas had said that one starts to really develop through making merit with this meditation. One really starts to develop the insight. And so that's something that one can have in mind, that this is indeed possible. It's when we say, oh no, it's not possible, that we turn these things off. And what the Buddha constantly encourages, just by some of the suttas we've read out already, it is possible. It is possible. So be encouraged by that. So just before we launch into the first verse, and I think that's what all we'll cover is the first verse in this session, is that loving kindness and the Noble Eightfold Path are intertwined, because they're both rooted in non-greed, non-hatred, non-delusion. So when we come into the world, we come into the world because we have greed, hatred, and delusion. And what happens is that we continue to cultivate the same thing. So we're taught that we are conditioned by society towards greed, hatred, and delusion. We look into the world, what do we see? Greed, hatred, and delusion. Why are there so many fights and wars in the world at an individual level, at a country level? It's because of greed, hatred, and delusion. So loving kindness, when we develop it, is our way of saying, we don't want to go in the way of the world. For this session right now, for the time that we meditate at home or go on retreat, we're actually putting our foot down and saying, no, we're going against the stream. We're actually going to develop something that is in the opposite direction, that is wholesome. And Noble Eightfold Path, which the Buddha calls as the way out of suffering, is also what does that. It is part of that. So what we will be able to see is that loving kindness actually activates the Noble Eightfold Path, because what Buddha is doing is he's correcting our view all the way through. And when he corrects our view, he's correcting the way we think, our intentions. And when he corrects that, then what we do, even at the beginning of loving kindness, is to develop right speech, right action. Then what follows is right livelihood. We make right effort all the way through. Right mindfulness is the one that is checking against right view and saying, yes, we're on the right track. This is what Buddha said. Yes, keep going. We disapprove of the wrong things and we approve of the right things. And what pops out at the end? Right concentration. So we don't go into meditation, bhavana, developing the mind, saying, I want right concentration and force the mind that way. No. We correct our view and the pathway unfolds. And that's what we will see in loving kindness, that all the way through, this is what the Buddha is activating. So we will keep coming back to this. So let's begin. Karaniya matta kusalena, what should be done of benefit and good? So the key word here is kusalena, kusala, what is of good, what is skillful, what is wholesome. And so what we're going to look at is very much dasa kusala. So those are the Pali words, which translates as 10 skilled states or 10 wholesome conduct. So it's really our actions that the Buddha is talking about. What we will see is that these actions are really our volitional formations. This is what brings us back into the world. So if we keep doing the unwholesome things, well, what is the result of that, even at the point of death? So what Buddha always trains in many suttas is, please try and cultivate the opposite by abandoning what is not good. And so it says, yantang santang padang abhisamecha, so as to realize the state of peace. So right up here, right at the front, state of peace. What is the ultimate state of peace? It's nibbana, complete liberation. So we can see karaniya metta is to realize nibbana. So when we talk about supramundane loving kindness, we're not talking about the metta that existed at the time of the Buddha. We're talking about lifting our game. So that's not to denounce metta that existed at the time of the Buddha or that exists in the world today, which is to wish people well in the sense of without any skilled states, just being nice. Sometimes people say nicey nice metta, but what we're aspiring to with Metta Lab and to develop more than that is to develop metta that comes from having skilled states, the purified mind, the purified verbal actions, the purified physical bodily actions. So it is high practice, but it's available to all of us, and it's something that all of us can do. So if we've done metta before that is more nicey nice metta, that still comes from a place of well-being, still comes from a place of compassion, that's a good thing. But the challenge here is to build from that, do more, follow the Buddha's instructions. I think one of the hardest things for people to do is to actually follow the Buddha's instructions. And I've been guilty of this before, that we start a meditation, but we never finish it. We never go through the whole sutta. And I think sutta meditation series was built on the fact that let's try and do suttas end to end. Let's not pick and choose what we pick of the Buddha's teachings. Let's follow his miracle of instructions and let's do really well from that. And so there's many blessings of doing that. So I encourage to really follow along and really be diligent to the Buddha's instructions. So, where do we go from here? Now, there's a couple of suttas that I put on the reading list, so I'll be publishing reading lists from time to time as we go through each stage of our meditation. So, with the first list, I included these sadhu suttas. So, sadhu sutta, this one is chapter 10 of Anguttara Nikaya, number 178. It talks about what is good or skilled. So, it's Buddha talks about what is bad, and he also talks about what is good. So he says, "Bhikkhus, I will teach you what is good and what is bad. Listen and attend closely. I will speak." "Yes, Bhante," those bhikkhus replied. The Blessed One said this. "And what, bhikkhus, is bad? Killing living beings, taking what is not given, sexual misconduct, false speech, divisive speech, harsh speech, frivolous speech, covetousness, ill will, wrong view. This is called bad." So this is akusala. And then he goes on, "And what, bhikkhus, is good? So abstention from the killing of living beings, from taking what is not given, from sexual misconduct, abstention from false speech, divisive speech, harsh speech, and also frivolous speech. And then non-covetousness, non-ill will, and right view. This is called good." So kusala. So good being skilled. So these are the skilled states that we need to have. So we need to give up these unwholesome ones, these bad ones, in order to develop these good ones. So the reason I say it in that way is because there are suttas where the Buddha actually literally says that. So Salaka Sutta, Potaliya Sutta, both in Majjhima Nikaya, the Buddha says, when we give up the bad ones, what happens is it opens up our ability to have the good ones, the skilled states. So we give up the bad states or the unskilled states to develop the good or skilled states. So that's why when we talk about metta, and you'll see this when we go through karaniya metta, we're always talking about what is non-metta, what is unskilled, because by admitting to those unskilled ones, it opens us up to develop the skilled ones. We automatically move in that direction. So that's something to understand as part of this meditative process, that we give up the bad, unwholesome, unskilled to walk the path of the good, the skilled, wholesome. And then the other sadhu sutta, which is discourse number 134 of chapter 10 on Anguttara Nikaya, the Buddha talks about what is the wrong path and what is the right path. So this is where the paths meet with loving kindness, with the wholesome states, skilled states. So the Buddha says, bad is wrong view, wrong intention, wrong speech, wrong action, wrong livelihood, wrong effort, wrong mindfulness, wrong concentration, wrong knowledge, and wrong liberation. So we have the Eightfold Path that becomes the Tenfold Path. So that's what's bad. That's what what we want to give up. And what is good, excuse me, is right view, right intention or thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. So that's Noble Eightfold Path. And it becomes the tenfold path with two more things, right knowledge and right liberation. So this is what is called good. So we can see that intersection between loving kindness and also Noble Eightfold Path, because we are going to be giving up things in order to walk this path. So let's look at the next line. Saka ujucha suhu jucha. So we probably will get to the end of this third line. So we won't even finish the first verse. And that's fine. Like one of the things that I've noted is when we take our time and don't rush, we get to look at these things more thoroughly and deepen different aspects of it. So the first thing that Buddha says is one should be able. So that means we need to be capable of these things. We need to be capable of doing dasa kusala, so the 10 skilled states. And so the first thing that we look at is upright, uju. So that's what we'll look at first. So I wanted to reference this sutta called Sansapaniya Sutta. It's the exposition on creeping. And it's just to reinforce about karma and rebirth. So as we said at the beginning, right view. So one needs to really take this to our mind and really establish right view to be upright. So it says, bhikkhus, beings are the owners of their karma, the heirs of their karma. They have karma as their origin, karma as their relative, karma as their resort. Whatever karma they do, good or bad, they are its heirs. So Buddha is right on the spot establishing right view. So whatever actions we do, we're the heirs, we're the owners of that. So he goes on to say, one creeps along by body, speech, and mind. One's bodily karma is crooked. One's verbal karma is crooked. One's mental karma is crooked. One's destination, therefore, is crooked. One's rebirth is crooked. So, for one with a crooked destination and rebirth, I say there is one of two destinations. So either the exclusively painful hells or the species of creeping animal. So what are the species of creeping animals? So the Buddha says snake, scorpion, centipede, mongoose, cat, mouse, owl, or any other animals that creep away when they see people. So that's something to bear in mind when we see these kinds of creatures. Their sila was very, very poor. Their conduct was very, very poor. And that's why they're reborn as these particular types of beings. And then the Buddha says, later in the sutta, one does not creep along by body, speech, and mind. So therefore, one's bodily karma is straight. So that's uju, that's upright. One's verbal karma is upright or straight. One's mental karma is straight. One's destination is straight. One's rebirth is straight. So one with a straight destination and rebirth, I say there is one of two destinations. So either exclusively pleasant heavens or eminent families, such as those of affluent elites or khatiyas, affluent Brahmins or affluent householders, families that are rich with great wealth and property, abundant gold and silver, abundant treasures and belongings, abundant wealth and grain. So we've seen that in other discourses, and also when we look at the discourses that appear on the heavenly abodes, that Buddha does talk about these things, or the devas actually mention these things, that they do have pleasant abiding. So even more than that, when Buddha talks about in the Ducharita Vipaka Sutta, the results of bad actions, we see that it's actually bad for us. So the worst case scenario is what we went through in Sansapaniya Sutta, that you know, we are reborn to lower realms, a bad destination. But if we're reborn as a human being, that means what happens is we have as a minimum, it leads to these things. So if we kill living beings, short lifespan. Now, if we don't kill living beings, then we have a longer lifespan. Taking what is not given, so stealing, we have loss of wealth. So that's why if we're generous, then we are able to hold on to wealth, to have wealth come to us. If there's sexual misconduct, then there's enmity and rivalry as a minimum. So if we don't do sexual misconduct, then we have harmonious relationships. We don't have this type of enmity and rivalry when it comes to relationships and friendships and all kinds of things. And then with false speech, then one can expect to being falsely accused. So if we have truthful speech, that does not happen. In terms of divisive speech, we would be divided from or having the breaking of one's friendship. So in terms of non-divisive speech, or harmonious speech, we would expect harmony in those friendships and not being divided. And then with harsh speech, then unappealing or disagreeable sounds. So even it would annoy and irritate us. And then with frivolous speech, then others distrust one's words, because what we speak about is unbeneficial, harmful, and so people would not trust us. And so if we don't have that kind of speech, then we don't get this. We would have people trusting our words because they're beneficial, helpful. So that's another aspect to bear in mind, to put some weight behind why we would want to give up unwholesome, unskilled actions, bad actions. So how do we become upright, uchu? So for this meditation, we firstly look at bodily actions and verbal actions. So we leave the mental actions for a bit later in our meditation. And the reason for that is because we look at the gross stuff first, the stuff that is more easy to correct. So it's like saying, if there's a killer, you wouldn't say to the killer, clean your mind first. You would say, please try and refrain from killing first. That's the gross action that is what one can refrain from first. Same with someone like a thief. You wouldn't say, you know, to a thief, oh, clean your mind of envy first. In actual fact, for loving kindness, it's easier to ask the thief to stop stealing first. And then once you stop stealing, to actually look at verbal actions and then mental actions. So that's why we start with bodily and verbal actions. Now, The first one is, for bodily actions, we abandon killing living beings because it's part of the non-hate path. So when we kill, it's part of the hate path. When we steal, it's part of the greed path. So by giving up stealing and we only take what is given, then that's part of non-greed. And with sexual misconduct, it's non-delusion. So sexual misconduct itself is part of the delusion path. It leads to greed. But what happens is when we abandon it, it's part of non-delusion. And then with verbal actions, false speech is part of the greed path. We often lie because we want to gain something or protect something. So when we give it up, it's part of non-greed. And then when it comes to divisive speech, this is part of hate speech. So this is what we see in the world. So when we give it up, we walk non-hate path. And harsh speech similarly is also part of hate. We also see this in the world. Then what happens is when we give it up, we start to walk the non-hate path. And then with frivolous speech, this is part of delusion. So delusion being the cruelty of when we have frivolous or empty speech, gossip, those sorts of things, things which are unbeneficial. And so when we give that up, we start to walk the non-delusion path. So we're going to go a little deeper into it, and then we're going to practice this. So it's always good to use Buddha's words. So I've gathered these words from the Pathama Nirāya Sakka Sutta. So where the Buddha actually explains what it means to kill living beings, take what is not given, sexual misconduct, and so on. So what we need to do is contemplate our bodily actions using our own examples. So in the Karaniya Metta Sutta, to be upright, uju, we need to give up or abstain from killing living beings. So we need to know what is killing living beings, what does it entail. So Buddha gives us some pointers. So do we destroy life? Are we murderous, bloody-handed, given to blows and violence, merciless to living beings? So no mercy, no compassion. So when we look at killing living beings, we need to take our own examples. So often I say, people often think, oh, I don't do these things. And that may be true. And so I don't want to call out anybody and say you're a liar. But what I've noted from running these sessions is that it's good to think back to childhood as a start, because normally in childhood, we can often see that we don't know better. And so if you can't think of any real life examples in recent times, go back to childhood. So it may be in terms of killing living beings, we didn't know about insects, we would catch them and squash them, we would stomp on them, we would swat them. So we end up killing them and we don't see that that's a bad thing. Now, remember, one of the things about this meditation is not about feeling guilty. So we don't do this meditation to guilt trip ourselves, to make ourselves feel bad. We actually bring our own examples, not to go with the story of it either, but to really say, ah, maybe for the first time, I'm acknowledging the difference between good and bad. And if that's the case, I'm actually calling up something where I did the wrong thing. And I'm doing it so that I can develop this meditation. I can lean towards the Buddha's noble path. That's why we're bringing our own examples. Because if we don't bring them, then it becomes just theory for us. It's only theory that we're learning and we're not applying it to ourselves. And we really need to apply it to ourselves. So take it as an encouragement. Take it lightly in some ways, not to feel guilt. This is not a guilt trip exercise. So other examples could be when we have insects in the house, we spray insecticides, or we set up like traps for mice or things like that. We also do certain things like stomp them with our feet, or we do certain things like that. So if you do those things, then admit that and see, is this something that aligns with loving kindness? And the answer would be no. Also, if we have pastimes like hunting animals or fishing or things that would hurt animals, then we need to admit that in our meditation right now, that this does not align with loving kindness. We need to turn that around. If someone were to do that to us, to catch us, hurt us, harm us, kill us, would we like that? No, it would be painful, it would be suffering. And so that's not metta. So we need to give that up. Now, it also applies to when we accidentally kill people. It could be a car accident. It could be even certain things where we don't expect to be part of something bad and it happens. It's also like that. When we do this meditation, what happens is we tend to do it time and time again. And the more we do it, more examples from our past come up. We start to admit these things. And to disapprove is basically what the Buddha is saying. So we can't stop what has happened in the past. But right now, what we can do is disapprove of it. And that's a very powerful thing because the mind goes from wrong path to right path instantly. And then the other thing that could come up is maybe having to euthanize our pet. Now at the time, we would have had a lot of compassion, thinking that's the right thing to do because they're suffering, but it's still killing a living being. We took the decision. So in order to go from wrong path to right path, then we need to say, I disapprove. Now, that's killing living beings. And so when we abstain, when we take that decision to disapprove, then what happens is we are now on the right path, non-killing path. The second one is abstain from taking what is not given. So Buddha simply says, do we steal the wealth and property of others? So one of these things is really about, you know, as a kid, maybe we used up all our pocket money. And so we go to our parents' wallet because they said they wouldn't give us any more money. So we go to their wallet and steal a few dollars here and there, a few rupees, depending on what country you live in, a few coins maybe. And so that's stealing. We may not have thought it was a bad thing at the time, but right now we can say, hey, we weren't given permission, so that's not a good thing. Let's give that up. Or it could be we hung out with the wrong crowd. We were shoplifting, or we wanted to rob a store and we actually went and did it. And it could be simply taking somebody else's property. We go to someone's place and we just take something, or we're at a restaurant and we just take the salt and pepper shakers or something. Sometimes we do really ridiculous things, and it's really important to make them conscious and in the meditation just to admit to it. And then it could be even more than that. It could be at work, we could misuse company funds. It could be taking something from work more than we're allowed to take. So taking stationery, taking the toilet paper, all kinds of stuff. Or if we work in a restaurant, stealing the supplies. Or even corruption on the job, like taking kickbacks, that's stealing. And so it goes more and more like that. It could be hacking into people's bank accounts or trying to nefariously gain other people's property. And so there's different measures of it. So we take our own examples. When we see we wouldn't like it happening to us, then it's easier to give up. And so we start walking the non-greed path in this case. And then when it comes to sexual misconduct, the Buddha gives quite very clear explanation. He asks, do we engage in sexual relations with those protected by their mother and father, brother, sister, or relatives who are protected by their Dhamma, who have a spouse, whose violation entails a penalty, even with one already engaged? So we may not have come across these words before, how explicitly Buddha explains it. So this includes sexual violence, sexual abuse. It includes anything with no permission. So whether it's no permission from family and relatives, or no permission because of one's religion, the path that one is practicing, or even somebody who is already promised or engaged to somebody else, or anything that is against the law. So this is something that each of us needs to contemplate. It could have been we've cheated in the past. It could have been that we've been overly aggressive or violent in the past. Whatever the case may be, we need to admit that, even the grave ones that we've done before. And so when one is willing to admit that, so if you're on the receiving end, you clearly know this does not line up with metta, and you would not want it done to yourself. So if one has done something regrettable, harmful in the past, then we admit it in the meditation, and that's how we abstain from sexual misconduct. That's what makes us upright right now. So I think it's very good to practice this. So what we can do is do a short meditation, just a few minutes, just to practice this. It's always good to practice. So we are purifying our bodily actions. So this is half of the becoming upright. So take one example of each and really see, okay, so if one has killed a cockroach before, then use that as an example. Would I like to be stomped on? Would I like that happening to me? Is this loving kind? And of course, one would say no. So in the meditation, you say, no, I give this up, I abandon it, and I want to walk this path, I want to develop metta. Same with stealing. If one has stolen money as a child from parents, then I will give this up. You know, I want to walk this path of loving kindness. I see how demeritorious it is. I see how harmful it is. And then same with sexual misconduct. Bring up an example from the past and really, again, give that up, knowing I wouldn't like this happening to me and I want to walk this path of metta. So let's do a short meditation. Blessings of the Triple Gem. Blessings of the Triple Gem. Blessings of the Triple Gem. We can come out of the meditation now. So now we come to contemplating our verbal actions using our own examples. So one thing to say before we go on to our verbal actions is it's really important to note that when we bring the mind to abandon the unwholesome side, so the unskilled state, and we come to the skilled state, that's something that should make us quite happy. And I want to make this quite conscious because a lot of us do the meditation sometimes a bit like boom, boom, boom. But when you get to the meditation, particularly at home, even if you just clean your bodily actions, then really look at the mind to see that, oh, this is something that maybe I've never done before, or I've been doing all this stuff during the day, during the weeks, and I've got to this point and the mind is clean. It's actually a very important thing. Think of it like when you build a house and you need very, very strong foundations. Often I say spend a lot of time on the first few steps of the meditation, such as uju, suju, suvicha, mudu. So the things around upright, very upright, easy to instruct, gentle, not arrogant. These steps are very important because they're the foundation for the rest of the meditation. And when we say foundation, it means our sila is good. Our morality, our good actions is very, very good. We're laying the cement for that. And it's not a small thing. A lot of people gloss through and just go, okay, I don't have that, I don't. And then what happens is they come to the other parts of the meditation and there's a lot of wobbling in the meditation. And the wobbling comes is because we haven't actually developed the path in a very strong way. And Buddha is very clear about abandoning unwholesome states, unskilled states, very, very clear. So if we just allow them to be there, if we don't seriously, deeply look at these things, then our meditation is very light and we wobble in the meditation. The mind won't easily concentrate because the mind knows it's not clean. So that's something during the meditation to really, that's something one can take delight in. That sometimes one gets tingles just knowing one has cleaned the mind. And at this point, like if you look at the meditation after you've done the cleaning, you think, wow, for the first time right now, it is not on the unskilled state. It is actually walking the path. So it's a big thing, and that's why I bring it up. So when it comes to contemplating our verbal actions, the first one is false speech. So most of us understand this. Buddha says, do we consciously lie or speak falsehood for our own ends, for another's ends, or for some trifling world end? So we normally lie because we want to gain something or we want to protect something we have gained. So think about it. At work, we might lie because we want to protect our reputation, or we might lie because we promise something that is very difficult to deliver to a client or to someone in the organization that we work for, and we don't want to fail at the job. So we lie, yes, 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 we can do it. We can deliver it on time, knowing full well we may not be able to do it. Or we lie to people in our family because we don't want them to tell us off or to give us a piece of their mind or their feedback. Or we lie to our friends because we don't want them to know certain things. But the ultimate thing to think about is, would we like to be lied to? Would we like to know that we've been lied to? So the same thing goes the other way around. And so there's a lot of non-loving kindness in lying, and it follows the greed path because lying is we lie because we want to gain. So if we see that, we take our own example and we say we disapprove. So remember, a lot of these things, we're not saying we have to do all these things out in daily life. What we're hoping is that if we train loving kindness, then eventually what happens is this becomes our conscious competence in meditation, which spills over into daily life as our unconscious competence. So really, the recommendation is always develop the meditation first. Don't try and do this out in the world when one is not skilled yet. Like, be patient with oneself. Part of the spiritual path is being patient. And one really needs to be patient because time and time again, one hopes that outside in the world, we fix everything, but it doesn't work that way. So let's do it in the meditation. Now, we come to abstaining from divisive speech. So divisive speech, the Buddha says, having heard something, do we repeat it to others to divide people or groups? Do we divide those who are united? Are we the creator of divisions who enjoys factions? So with this, it's very clear, this is wanting to split people, not liking to see people in harmony. So at work, if we don't like someone being too close to our favorite person or our boss, then we might go and say something to remove someone's qualities, to tell bad points and therefore divide them. In the family, it's very much the same, that we would go and, you know, tell our parents something about a sibling if we don't get along with our sibling, to show them up or something. And so that's the other thing that we don't want to do. Or in a friend of ours is going out with someone that we don't like, or is married to someone we don't like, then we might say things when they ask us, what do you think about this person? And we might say, oh, we don't think they're that good. Or so there's divisive speech there. So that is not loving kind. So when you see that, then again, you can turn it around and think, would I like that happening to me? Somebody dividing me from my loved ones, from my boss, or all kinds of different scenarios? The answer would be no. And so this is a way to disapprove. And when we disapprove, then what happens is we start to walk the path. We're able to develop loving kindness. Otherwise, if we have all these things that make us crooked, we have holes in our metta bucket. It's almost like we can do loving kindness to certain people, but to people that we have divisive speech around, that we have disharmony for, we can't do it for them. And metta is really about all living beings. Then we come to harsh speech. So again, like divisive speech is hate. It's not a hate. So here the Buddha says, do we utter words that are rough, hard, or hurtful to others, offensive to others, bordering on anger, unconducive to concentration? So this one's very apparent. You know, if we raise our voice, if we use rude language, if we say harmful things, hurtful things, if we offend people, then of course that doesn't align with loving kindness. So we see this much in the world. We see it when people fight. We see it when people argue. We see it even on social media, writing out those words of having harsh speech, divisive speech. So these are the things we can refrain from. So people often think if I write something out on the internet, it's fine, but actually it's not. So those are examples we can use if that has been the case. So when we see that, we want to abandon it, we want to give that up. And so that makes us able to cultivate metta, able to walk the Noble Eightfold Path. Then when it comes to abstaining from frivolous speech, so the Buddha says, do we speak at an improper time? Gossip, speak what is unbeneficial, speak contrary to the Dhamma and the discipline. Do we speak words that are worthless, unreasonable, rambling, and unbeneficial? So this includes gossip. This includes all the topics of conversation that are unbeneficial. So the Buddha has a whole list of them, ranging from neighborhood gossip to talk about the elites, talk about wars, talk about politics, talk about when the world formed and when it will, how far the world exists. Talks about the same with the oceans, talks about talk at the drinking hole. So in our terms, talk at the pub. What we can't see is that a lot of these things are quite harmful to us and also can be harmful to other people. When we gossip, there's cruelty in that. When we talk at an improper time, someone else might be trying to do something important and we go and interrupt them at that wrong time, and it makes them very disorganized and maybe harms their work. And then speaking contrary to the Dhamma, it deepens where this is coming from. If we keep having frivolous speech, it obstructs the Dhamma. And so when one is obstructed from the Dhamma and the discipline, it's very, very difficult. So when we realize this, even if we realize that it's cruel, even if we realize that it is harmful, or that it obstructs the Dhamma, obstructs wisdom being able to be formed, that's what delusion does. Like frivolous speech is rooted in delusion. It's obstructive to wisdom. Then that's how we're able to give that up. So let's again do a short meditation to purify our verbal actions. Just take one example from each, see that it doesn't match up with metta, loving kindness, and disapprove of it. So when we disapprove, then we're able to become fully upright. Okay, let's do a short meditation. Blessings of the Triple Gem. blessings of the Triple Gem, we can come out of the meditation. So you can see that the mind is relatively clean. That's something to be happy about. I think that's one of those things that when you look at the mind now, especially after hearing the Buddha's words for this session, one can see that the mind is uplifted. So there's just one more part that we'll include. It's just a short part. It's about suju, so thoroughly upright. So here, this step is very simple. When we realize that in order to walk this path, in order to realize the state of peace, in order to develop loving kindness, one needs to be upright, then for thoroughly upright, what we say is we make a strong intention to keep this sila. So remember at the beginning, part of the Buddha's saying was, we don't go back to what we have conquered. So we don't go backwards. So this is part of being thoroughly upright. It's with that understanding we say, now that we've cleaned the mind, we're not going to go backwards for this meditation. So it's harder to go back into the world, but for the meditation, while we're developing loving kindness, we make a strong determination or a strong intention to keep this sila. So it's so hard for us to clean, you know, the killing, the stealing, the sexual misconduct, the four kinds of wrong speech, in order to then have the skilled states. So that's seven skilled states that we have. So with that understanding, we make a strong determination. Let me keep this sila. Let me keep this skilled states, because we don't want to have to go and conquer it again. So if we're doing this whole meditation, that's the intention that we have. So we can even make that intention now. May we keep these skilled states. And we'll see as we go along how important that is, because as we start to refine the meditation through each of the metta labs, what we're doing is we're becoming more and more skilled. And so it's very, very important, because once we go through, you'll start to see why having this strong intention is very important, because the meditation can wobble and it will wobble. And so we need to know these tips in order to actually sustain the meditation. So that's probably a good place to end our session today. And with that, what we can do is share the merit. So for the first few sessions, we won't have any live chat while I'm still getting familiar with the technicalities and everything. What we'll do is maybe one of these sessions, we'll have a Q&A on loving kindness where we can have live chat and I can answer some questions. But for the time being, while I'm getting used to these things or getting back into it, we can just go with the sessions without the live chat. So let's pay gratitude to the Buddha for this wonderful Dhamma. Let's pay gratitude to the noble ones who help us with this Dhamma. Let's also pay gratitude to all those who have helped us on this noble path, past and present. And we can share merit with all sentient beings. May all beings be happy and well. May all beings be free from suffering. Blessings of the Triple Gem to all of you, wishing you to grow in wholesome qualities. So practice as much as you can until the next session. And I'll do a quick recap on the next session, and then we'll keep moving the meditation forward. And if you have any burning questions, you can always email suttameditationseries@gmail.com. Okay, blessings of the Triple Gem, Theravada Saranai, wishing you well.